Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 505. Same pig, different lipstick. We've got some jokes for your classroom and some tools for your classroom, and we're going to talk about some pigs. So, without further ado, here is the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean Merker. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I am doing all right. Apparently, we got a little bit popular as well, so we're going to have to make some... The site is going to crash. No. So you're probably listening to this in May, even though we're recording it in April. Because, yeah, we've had an awful lot of traffic, which is a good thing. However, our plan was not sufficiently prepared for that much traffic, so we're going to have a little whoopsie here. So... now that you are listening to this and it is May, it is back up and running and should continue to run without issue whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Long story on that. So, we apologize. I apologize for the inconvenience because it's not really Sean's fault on this one. This one's on me. Hey, couple quick questions for you.
All right. I got quick answers.
Why does Waldo always wear stripes?
42. And so they're right answers. I just got answers
right
for you.
They answered everything. He doesn't want to be spotted.
I like it.
All right, if you are going to play basketball, there is one donut place that you do not want to play basketball against. Which one? You do not.
I would guess I would not. I do not want to go to Dunkin' Donuts.
That's right. They would be jamming on you, man. What is an unemployed jester?
An unemployed jester. I don't know. A politician.
I like your answer. I may like your answer better, but the official one is nobody's fool.
Got it.
Get it? Nobody's fool.
Yeah.
What do you call an alligator in a vest?
I don't know. What do you call an alligator in a vest?
Investigator.
Gotcha. Mm. We'll have to look into that one.
What's it called if you are afraid of giants?
Normal. Absolutely normal.
Yes. And it's also called fee-fi-phobia.
Got it. I like that one better.
Yeah. Now, there's a couple of additional thoughts. You know, there's many signs that a wedding is an emotional day.
Oh?
But I'm going to add even one more in there. The cake is in tears.
Sure is. You're right.
Tears. Okay.
Yeah.
The black eyed peas can sing us a tune. But chickpeas can only hum us one.
Gotcha. Yep. Now, yeah, and it's delicious too.
Now I want to go to Golden Bakery, get a chicken shawarma sandwich and some hummus. All right. I also have a couple of visual jokes for you, and one that I specifically put in there for Sean.
Oh.
So you'll have to head over to the site and check out the jokes. There is one that is specifically for Sean.
So, okay.
And when you head out over there, the one of the people that heads out over there regularly is very culturally responsive. and believes in culturally responsive and relevant teaching as well. And I know lots of people do. You've been trained on culturally responsive teaching, correct?
Mandatory.
Yep. Mandatory. Mandatory.
Yep, it was mandatory.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you might want to listen to that's not mandatory, but probably should be, is the Middle School Science Minute this week, though.
Oh, no. Yeah. That is you gotta listen to that.
That's a you gotta. Yeah. Because this week, the wonderful, the fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mr. Dave Bidlowski mm-hmm. is going to talk about culturally responsive teaching. So here, without further ado, is the Middle School Science Minute with the wonderful, the fantastic Mr. Dave Bidlowski.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the March-April 2021 issue of Science and Children, and I read the editor's note written by the editor, Elizabeth Barrett-Zahn, and she wrote an article entitled Culturally Responsive Teaching. And she said that at the heart of culturally responsive and relevant teaching is a willingness to listen, reflect, and celebrate the richness that cultural and linguistic diversity has to offer. Eugene Garcia and Oki Lee, in their article Creating Culturally Responsive Learning Communities and Teaching Science to English Language Learners, spoke to the necessity for diversity to be viewed as a resource for teaching and learning rather than being viewed as a problem or deficit. Teachers can maximize potential as students build understanding by integrating prior knowledge with new information within a culturally supported community with a focus on recognizing, utilizing, and promoting cultural and linguistic resources. More and more states have instituted culturally responsive teaching guidelines in classrooms, emphasizing embracing diversity, enhancing cultural connections, and identifying how implicit bias can affect daily decisions, relationships, and expectations. Yet, few states have fully embedded culturally responsive teaching practices beyond pre-service requirements or one-and-done professional learning opportunities. Just as many teaching techniques first employed for students with learning differences or for second language learners, it is often revealed that what makes these such effective strategies for the intended group also enhances learning opportunities for all. Good teaching is good teaching, and it starts with knowing and understanding your students as people with gifts, challenges, connections to the community, and life history. Being aware of, sensitive to, and supportive of increasing access to role models in literature, the community at large, and the historical stories told needs to be a goal in education. We've all been fed a long-standing diet, especially in science and engineering, that all the fathers of science are just that, fathers and predominantly white. There was a time when, in her science lab hallway, it was graced with large photographs of the giants in science, Newton, Mendel, Einstein, Darwin, to name a few. Yet it only took one observant student pointing out that all of the photos were of old white guys for her to see that she'd been promulgating the one-story history. She's not saying we shouldn't admire and honor the greats of science. Still, we need to consider complete history, including the voices and contributions from varied cultural and linguistically underrepresented communities. It's time to listen, reflect, and consider how we can provide learning opportunities as we recognize and respect our students' lives, inherent gifts, and histories. Creating learning environments where diversity is valued, expectations are elevated, and cultural and linguistic contributions are celebrated. It will enhance student understanding of a socially just and equitable world. Focusing on possibilities rather than deficits will inspire young learners to reach their potential and beyond. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
Okay. I guess I could have paused the show and gone and got lunch, but I did not.
No.
So we'll continue on.
Just as a corollary, really quick, AMLE just posted an article in the curriculum section on their website, also tying in interdisciplinary cultural responsive teaching. So after you listen to Dave, sneak over to AMLE's website and look at that about pulling in stuff, from, you know, making it interdisciplinary. So,
yeah,
it just popped up Friday. I didn't look at it long, you know, for me to say I could include it in the show, but I know it popped up. So, but while the iron's hot, let's strike. And I want to, you know, if you get a chance to go over there and take a look at that, I'll try and find a link and put it in the show notes here later today.
Terrific. Sounds good. So the year is continuing on, and essentially, I've heard fewer and fewer places that are, doing a lot of yo-yoing. I still have heard some places. I've heard a few places that are doing, that have, we're taking a 2-week pause because 27 kids tested positive. But, and Michigan is making the national news for an incredibly high rate of positivity, and we'd rather be positive in other areas, but not this one. And hospitalization rates are up and all of that. But for the most part, most places are continuing on with what they've, if they're in, they're in. If they're out, they're out. It's kind of like the hokey pokey, right?
But put your students in, take your students out, put your students in.
And shake them all about, yeah. Or yeah, reschedule them all about, I think is part of it as
there
well.
There you go. I like that one better.
Yeah.
It's still called the hokey pokey, though. And everybody gets all turned around. Because that's what it's all about.
Yeah. And I've heard some real discussions about next year, and a lot of schools are planning on having a virtual option for next year. It seems, based on the scuttlebutt that I hear, is that schools are planning for that. They're like, well, we don't know if all this is going to be, quote, over, and all the kids are coming back, and we're not sure if certain families are coming back or not. So it seems as though lots and lots and lots of schools are looking at virtual options. And, you know, we've talked about this, about how it can work really, really well for certain kids. It's probably doesn't work for everybody. And it really does take a different teaching skill set. There's some different pedagogies involved there as well. So
yeah, and limited. Sorry.
No, as Michigan Virtual University has done some good stuff lately, and I did not put it in the show. So, but they've done some good stuff, and in terms of doing some research and taking a look at what's worked well, like who the teachers are, and then what's worked well and what has been a challenge as well. And they have posted something called Key Strategies for Engaging Pop-ups. Key Strategies for Engaging Students in Virtual Learning Environments, which I found very interesting, and I am putting it in the show right now. And what they've done is they've looked at, it's a qualitative study using an online survey to collect data from 1,809 virtual educators, 1,721 teachers, and 88 supervising administrators. And then they discuss some of the findings. And they break it up into full-time teacher and part-time teacher. And some of it is kind of a no-brainer. But some of it is also kind of interesting as well. So it is, I use multiple formats of content, such as text-based articles, video, audio, etc. That was the highest strategy used by both, by full-time teachers. It was the highest strategy. It was high for part-time teachers, but not quite the highest. The highest for part-time teachers was I post motivational relational announcements in my course. So, you know, there's a lot of discussion about SEL and how do we take care of that. And so the part-time teachers who mostly are teaching full-time as well. I mean, I know some of them, not the 1,328, but I know a couple. Are full-time teachers who are teaching a course or two as well through, you know, MVU.
Yeah.
And that is also high on the, it's the third strategy used by the full-time teachers. So, but there's some interesting engagement strategies here. I think there's a lot to discuss here. They do talk about the relationship with students. They talk about communication. They talk about feedback, appealing to students' interest, humanizing, synchronous in meetings. And then they also discuss through the implications. I think this is a good starting point for a lot of people to talk about, well, what does good online learning look like? What does it include? Because this gives you some tangible things to start with, right? Gives you some specific strategies. It gives you some strategies to make sure you're addressing. I found it interesting in part some of the lower things. Like some of the lower things where I have students collaborate or work together on projects or activities. That one was very low with online. And you can understand why. It's hard, you know, a little harder for teachers to structure. They don't have the background to do that. But that one I was kind of surprised that it was the lowest, because we know the power of kids working together, even working together virtually. And kids do work together regularly, right? They usually do it on games, but they do work together. They know how to do that. So, but I thought this was an interesting study, and I, full disclosure, I am working with a statewide group, and this is some of the work that's related to that group as well. And I believe they're going to do more of this, and I think that that's great. They're going to do more research. They're going to do more investigation, and they're publishing this and sharing it. So it is widely available. This is not proprietary information. So it is out of the Michigan Virtual Learning Research Institute. Chris Harrington is the lead on this, and one of the leads on this, and does really good work. I like Chris a lot. So So, and there's a link in the show notes. You can check that out. But it is, for me, it's part of that question of, you know, what's going forward? Because it seems like a lot more schools are talking about having online options and not the kind of online options that we had before. It seems like they're talking about something different. But it truly needs to be something different. They have to truly put some work and some effort into this. And this is hard work. This is things that need to be understood, need to be understood at the top of an organization and all the way through, from, you know, the kids need to understand what's going to be expected of them and how they're going to be doing it. The parents need to understand what's going to happen. Teachers need to build some new skill sets. They can apply a lot of the skills that they have, but they're still going to need to build some new skill sets. And it's also an opportunity for people to reevaluate that. But then there needs to be support from the administrative level and from the district level, because this is going to look and feel a little different. And we've got to be comfortable with this looking and feeling different as well. So, oh yeah. So how is your year moving along? You have any reports you want to share?
Our kids did end of year testing. So I spent a week testing my kids, which I thoroughly enjoy, because once I set them up and I let them go, I can get stuff done. You know, and an interesting thing happened. Admin was really worried that because of the stress of the test, he didn't want any of the work, our kids to do any work, right? So basically our kids came in, took an hour and 15 minute test, and then two of them, and then they were good for the week. They didn't have anything to do. And so I had kids popping up on my Google Classroom feed saying, I'm bored, please get something to do. So I made a extra credit assignment that I said I wouldn't do. I made one, and I said, look, it's, you know, this is something to do, and I'll even give you extra credit for doing it. It's a chapter we're not going to hit. It's on William Shakespeare. And there's the audiobook, there's the transcript, there's the closed activity. Here's some foundational background on a play. Here's the director's background notes on this particular play. And here is Twelfth Night, performed by the Montana School, Shakespeare in the Schools through PBS. I said, here's the link. I'm just going to link it. You can go watch it. And then I've got two questions for you at the end, essay questions. And the first one was, what is love? Because that's, you know, the play discusses all different kinds of love, like what is true love, what is not true love. And then I said, what about revenge? You know, do practical jokes, is it possible to take a practical joke too far? Because in the play, they take a practical joke too far. And which is perfect for middle school kids, right? Because that's exactly what they do with all of their practical joking. So talk about the dangers of practical joking. And then I gave them I did this in H5P. I should talk about this just a little bit. I did this all in H5P in an interactive book, which I have grown to love even more than column, because you can put columns inside books. And so I did this all in book, and then I gave them a chance to pre-think their stuff, right? So before they watched the movie, they did a short little thought essay on what they thought love was. And they thought, and then I had them write about what they thought revenge was, right? Then I had them watch the video, read the play notes, watch the video. And then the assignment, which was a separate piece at the end, that is a two-parter. I put an assignment piece in there that said, all right, tell me about love and revenge. And I'm looking for these things right here. Talk about these things. And it's going to be an essay, and I made it worth a few points. And I'm going to take that, throw that in the kitty, and that'll be extra credit for. And I extended it because there's a bunch in there. The play is an hour and 20 minutes, hour and 30 minutes. And it was performed in front of a middle school. So we're not talking about, like, you know, Royal Shakespearean Theater with all that other stuff. You know, they're doing it in such a way that they're also communicating to the kids through body action. And you don't necessarily have to know Elizabethan English to do it. That, and they come right out front and say at the very beginning, look, this is going to be Elizabethan English, but this is like when you first wake up in the morning and your eyes are getting used to the light you know, and they have to adjust. And once they adjust, everything's good. He says, you're going to find that with the way we're doing this play is that, yes, we're going to keep a lot of the language, but you're going to find that as we do this, you're going to pick up on the language and it'll be just like adjusting to the light. And they do. They do a pretty good job of it. So I'm looking to see what happens. I've also extended it through because we have state testing coming up next week, right?
Yay!
MSTEP. Yeah. So we've informed our parents and our students that we have the opportunity to take the MSTEP available for them next week on Tuesday and Wednesday. One of those days is going to be 85 degrees.
Yay!
Whoa.
And
so if it's 85 degrees outside, how warm is it inside?
There is a proportional mathematical calculation to figure that out. I don't have those mathematical chops to do it. But yes, there is a proportional relationship between the two. So I plan on bringing my little mini fridge down there and stocking it with water for the teachers that have to show up for it. And we're going to do our test. But like I said in another show, you know, we've already been told. The kids have already said, I'm coming. I don't care about the test. I just want to come and hang out with you guys. I just want to hang with my teachers.
Right.
And so we'll see. We'll see what happens. And I think one of the differences this time that makes a difference with that is with the eighth grade test, they planned just the test. And this time, the school counselor who does a lot of the test administration for us, she said, you know what? Didn't take the kids nearly as long. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to plan in a little bit of relationship time with you guys. So you'll have a chance to build a relationship with the kids a little bit before they take the test. And that face-to-face time, then we can optimize some of that for, you know, it going into the rest of the year. But I have great news. I have wonderful news. After this
week, what is your wonderful news, Sean? Your great news.
Only six,
wonderful news.
There are, 6 weeks. There's 6 weeks till.
Wow.
Till this, year is over. And we've done a year and a half of, not quite a year and a half, but of distance learning, you know. And I don't know. Is it like, do I get a little badge for that? Do I get a medal for, you know? There should be, right? Teachers should be getting. Yeah. That might be, actually, it might be a fundraiser for the show. We construct a little medal for I Survived Virtual Learning. Make one for the kids, too. A little pin for the kids and a medal for the teachers.
So that leads, I think, to one of the things that's come up in discussions is kind of tool talk. And I've heard people saying, I need to use new tools. I need to find something new. And I've heard other people who are quietly being successful with kids, having kids learn without having to do that. So I was going to ask you what your experience was, both from the people you've heard of and from your own experience in the classroom. Is it at a point where you feel like you need to add some, quote, new tools in so that kids don't get bored with the tool, so that they keep engagement? Or do you feel as though you've got tools in place that you don't have to go looking for something as well?
So I was actually having a conversation with a teacher in my building who is a mutual friend of ours. And she is a Luddite when it comes to technology. And she's actually come a lot farther than she realizes. I think part of this whole thing has also been to make her think that she's not actually learning or doing technology when she really is. She's made leaps and bounds. She doesn't want to admit it. She's in denial about it, but she has. She's grown so much as a teacher this past year and a half. So she and I were talking about that. And she was lamenting to me about all the different tools that are being thrown her way. Try this, do this, do this. Right. And she said, she named one or two tools that she's tried. And she goes, Sean, it just doesn't work for me. The kids just don't respond. It just does not work. And And she goes, you know, how are you using that particular tool? And I looked at her and said, I don't use that tool. I said, it doesn't work for me either. And I said, I don't like having 10 different tools and having to have the kids log into 10 different places. There's a service that we subscribe to where the kids then click on a button and it automatically logs them into a different thing, right? This is going to be that one center hub. The little buttons look like little Skittles with the logo of the app on it, and they click on it and it goes right there and it logs them in. So it's supposed to take away or eliminate that layer of login-ness and distraction that the kids theoretically can then just go. It's like a portal to the various different things, right? Or a hub for the various different tools that are spread and scattered throughout the world. And she says, what are you doing instead? I said, well, I said, H5P has a lot of stuff in it. I said, I'm just using H5P for a lot of my stuff. And I think Rick Wormley said something that was really important that hit me. It's not – kids need structure. Kids want structure. They crave structure. If I change up my routine, they notice it. They say, what's going on? And if I come up with a legitimate answer, they're like, okay, then I can handle that. Otherwise, they'll say, yeah, let's not do that again. And so, okay, well. So I haven't had too many of those, but I have noticed this. But Rick Wormley said something interesting. He says, you know, he says, when you encounter boredom or you encounter kids that are higher functioning, in order to accommodate for the higher functioning and still maintain something for those lower level kids who need just basic structure, you don't increase the number of things to do. You increase the complexity of the things that are already there. Right. So H5P has been nice for that because I can increase the complexity and run it up and down by choosing various different activities within H5P to do, excuse me, without having to add in more stuff for them to do, because kids will sniff out busy work really quick. They know exactly what it looks like and what it smells like and what it tastes like, and it leaves a bitter taste in their mouth. And so I don't want that for them. I don't want it for me either, because then I have to create more stuff. I don't want to do that. I want to create what they need and not beyond that. And so I've been doing that, trying to do that within H5P, creating some things. And it's not necessarily been a higher complexity every time. I've just been changing up the way that they see things, and it's that's been enough variety for them to, you know, pique their interest going, oh, this is new. Oh, this is different. Oh, he did this again. I know what to do here. And I think it piggybacks on what Carippo's whole thing is with Edu protocols. Edu protocols are just simply a format and a structure to do something. So when you walk in and say, look, hey kids, we're doing a cyber sandwich today. Well, then they know what a cyber sandwich is and they know what to expect. It's the content within it that all changes and varies up. And I get what he's trying to do. And he says, you know, he says, I don't use more than two or three protocols, he says, in a year, or four or five, he says. There's lots of them, but, you know, I don't have to use them all. I use the ones that I'm comfortable with. And once I've taught the structure to the kids, it's like Kagan structures. Kagan structures are very similar in that respect, you know. And so H5P has been my structure. But within that structure, then I can add in some complexity and some flavor that has made it made learning, online learning, palatable for them. That's been a big thing for me. Your mileage may vary.
Yeah, I agree. I think as a school principal, you know, we had school-wide strategies that we used. And so once you taught the kid the strategy, once you taught them how to do a Frayer model, you know, once you taught them how to do a KWL chart, you didn't have to teach them the structure anymore. You could get to actually the learning part. And I agree with that. There is some structures. And my question is, if you're changing from tool to tool to tool, if you find yourself saying, I have to change a tool to keep the kids' engagement, is that a sign that that's a shiny thing for you and not in something that has depth to it? Because I don't need to be, if you give me something that I have to think hard about and I have to work on, I'm engaged. Something that I have some interest in. I don't need it to be shiny. If it's something that I have some interest in and that I have to, that I can work for, I don't need it to be newly newly minted. I don't need to go from tool A to tool B to tool C. I just need to get into that depth of thinking. And that's one of the things that is kind of a sign for me that it might be time to stop and ask, what does engagement of kids mean? Does it mean that they're figuring out which buttons to push on this thing? Or does it mean that they're engaged in their own learning, that they are making connections with other things that they've done or other instances of use? You know, we talked last week, I think it was last week, we talked about, I hope we talked about it at least. I think you and I talked about it at the minimum, about applying knowledge in other places. Like the goal of education is for you to have a skill set so that you can apply it in other places. And that to me is part of the, you know, this building these competencies. And if you find yourself, well, okay, we now have 6 weeks left. It's time for me to put a new tool into place. That for me is it time to put a new tool in place because you are now comfortable with everything that you're using and can use them in depth? Or is it time because the kids are getting tired? The luster has worn off of the tool that you were using, and now you have to find a new shiny one and replace that. So I thought that was interesting. I just thought that tool talk was interesting.
John Crippo said something last week that I think ties in with that. We were talking about using, I forget the names. It's like our shows. They don't necessarily have anything to do with what we talk about. So he's got these names for things, and it makes me stop and go, is this the one where you use this or you do that? I've just got to get used to the names is all. But he was talking about one of the tools where he says, you know, at the very beginning of the class, I just have the kids play this, you know, play one of these games that has the stuff in it. I don't create the content. I just go find it. And I think to myself, then it has nothing to do with what you're actually teaching. But I don't want to say that. I was having a conversation with someone else that I forgot who it was. Yeah, it may have been you and I before a show. And all he's doing, because he talked about, he says, I've done quizzes, I've done Bluekit, I've done Kahoot. And they're all three of those are games that ask a question and then have the student produce an answer and then get points. And then you could sabotage other kids, which I think maybe a lesson in teaching something else anyway, but that's not the show. As he's going through the different things, different questioning pieces of software. The software all does the same thing, except it has its own little twist or spin on it. And I'm thinking it's the same exact pig. It's just different lipstick on each pig.
And that's an interesting analogy.
So you didn't expect us to go to the pigs today.
I did not. I did not expect that.
That was your surprise.
But that's just when I just kept seeing this over and over and over. I kept seeing people going, do you have any tools I can use? Do you have any tools? And I was like, it's a pre-COVID analogy to running down the hallway going, do you have any worksheets I can use? Do you have any? I don't care what they're about. do you have something I can stick in front of the kids, kind of thing.
Well, and that's another thing too, is I've noticed that there's a number of sites that people are recommending that all it is the worksheet in a digital format. Right. And a lot of people are simply loving this, that tool or whatever, because they can take an existing worksheet and they can just simply scan it and use it in without having, you know, doing the minimal level of work and not having to do anything with increasing complexity or things like that, where kids, they're just worksheeting the kids as they go through the virtual thing. One of the struggles I've been having is finding good places for students to produce and create a variety of content. And because I want them to do they need to work harder than I do. I already passed seventh grade.
So that's one of those things that I struggle with when I'm talking to teachers about, like, what good, effective teaching should be. Because mm-hmm. teachers are working really super, super hard.
Right? They are.
Totally get that.
Understatement, yep.
Yeah. And I talk about, well, what are the students doing?
Right.
And, you know, what are the students doing? What are the students doing? Because the person doing the work is the person doing the learning. So the teachers, the kids need to do the work. The kids need to work. And they don't always want to do the work, by the way.
Nope.
But the kids need to do the work. And so, you know, as I'm talking to teachers and we're talking about strategies, we're talking about pedagogy, we're talking about how to do this, and moving the work that they're doing over to some of the work that they're doing over to the students, it's not that the teachers are now doing less. And it's not that they're actually working not as hard. They're working differently. And that's one of the things that I sometimes really have to work hard at getting teachers to understand. You're still going to have to work hard, but it's going to be different. It's just different. You don't have to do the same things. Some of them, I've worked with some teachers, and I think they're afraid that if they move some of this over to the kids, they're not going to have anything to do. I'm like, no, don't worry about that part. You'll have plenty to do. It's just different. It is different work that you do. It's higher thinking skills. It's what you should be trained for. It's what you should be doing on a more regular basis. And we don't always get to that. So that's one of those things that it's like, it's not that you're not going to work hard. Because I'm afraid of that. Because I'm afraid of if I tell teachers, you know, you're working too hard, move some of it to the kids, you won't have to work as hard. Then when they find out that they're still working, it's just different work. It's that it's like you lied to me, and I don't want to lie to anybody. So the work is different, but it makes for kids actually learning more and being more effective in their life as well. So, all right, there's a couple of other things, and I think we've talked about them, so I don't know that we'll spend tons of time this week, but learning loss is another thing that keeps going around and around, and there was an analogy that was making the rounds this week about learning loss and how it's not learning loss. It's just a whole different construct. And they used an engine for the construct. So I'll see if I can find that link to that as well. And then summer plans. I think summer is going to be really interesting this year because a lot of people are planning on a lot of school. So I think summer will look different this year as well. One thing that won't look different, though, is the Twitterverse. The Twitterverse will continue to look pretty much like it does. Unless, of course, you switch over to Mastodon. Mastodon does look different. Because Mastodon does not have advertisements.
Right.
You don't get the... It's open source, but there's also not quite as much engagement there as well. But the Twitterverse, there is. So let's catch up with the Twitterverse.
Well, there's Lydia Jennings, FID, PhD, sorry, at One Native Soil Nerd. So she posted a link to an article, and I've read a little bit of it. I don't know how much of it. I've got to do some more study on it. But she links to an article that has a very interesting proposition. So Maslow, right? Maslow's hierarchy of needs was informed by the Blackfeet Nation And he mixed it up because he didn't know how to make it fit within America's individualized culture. And so his, or her, the article, the link, is, let me jump over here. Oh, come on. There we go.
I find it interesting that it's an AMP article, too. It has an AMP version. So.
Oh, does it? Okay.
That's the ending of it is AMP. So that is, they're using the AMP structure. That's a nerdy thing. So sorry to inject that into a non-nerdy discussion. Okay.
Well, you just out-nerded me. I'd have to explore the I'd have to get it all amped up before I am. But anyways, so she's making some interesting, or she's using the article to make some interesting correlations between how Maslow. She's saying Maslow didn't really come up with it, and that he took it from somewhere else and repurposed it to fit his needs, I guess is the best way to put it, since it's a hierarchy of needs. But it's an interesting article to read. And then the article is by, let me double check it here, it's by Tehu Revelachan, which is, I know I so messed that up. But it's just an interesting article to read about a different perspective on Maslow's hierarchy, because we cite it so often. Maybe this perspective would give us a little different understanding about the way we look at kids. So Troy is now lost in Maslow. So we're going to go to something that's close. We're going to, instead of Abraham Maslow, we're going to go to Larry Ferlazzo. At Larry Ferlazzo, the best places to get accessible history texts for ELLs. And I thought this was a really cool source. This, in this case, it's history and social studies. But it's a link to all different kinds of – I shouldn't say all. It's a link to the free history resource for ELL newcomers. And, of course, Larry Ferlazzo is a prolific author and has written several books on teaching ELLs. He's got a lot of really good stuff and strategies in a lot of his books. And so this is a lot of good stuff, and it's got a link to Core Knowledge, History and Geography, K-6, which, of course, the sixth grade one is one that we would work at. But there's some links, and so go check it out. Like I said, he's just got a ton of resources on his website. I thought this was interesting. Will Richardson taught for a long time, if I remember correctly, in New Jersey. He's not part of the Big Questions Institute. And so just a thought experiment he threw up there into the Twitterverse. A contractual obligation to hand in lesson plans a week in advance. Wow. That's an interesting story about trust and power and respect. Huh? I was told by someone that this is the way to go. You write your lesson plans a month in advance and you stick to them. And that way the parents know they can plan their vacations out, you know, and they can plan stuff for their kids out a month in advance. And I thought, well, those are some pretty regular kids with no questions. Anyways, it just made me go, huh. Don't bring this one up at the teacher's lounge. New Jersey Association for Middle Level Education at NJAMLE. The hunger for learning remains a constant for middle-level educators in May, and we at NJAMLE have just the recipe. Mrs. Kristen Corris from at Dover Middle NJ presents Helping Learners with Disabilities During Remote Learning. So they're going to host a session at May 12th. Sorry, I almost said 5 o'clock. May 12th at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it's going to be a free virtual workshop. I noticed that a number of associations have put together some online stuff. North Carolina just did three of them here this first quarter of the year. New Jersey's doing one, and I know that Ohio does one every now and then. So keep your ears open. Keep on the lookout, because a lot of state associations around the United States and the provinces, and I mentioned in Europe as well, are producing these little mini PDs. And in this case, New Jersey's doing it for free. So don't forget hashtag MS chat every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as Troy says, the Twitter never stops.
It does not, but, you know, the strategies don't stop either. And if you've got 5 minutes, you're going to have 5 minute learning moments. There's 50 activities.
Oh, you know, I put this in strategies. I should have thrown it in resource. So this comes from the the Lithuanian.
One strategy Lithuanian, is to have good resources.
Oh, yes. That's, yeah. I don't know. I'm out of it today. I don't know what's going on. So this comes from the LPKA, the Lithuanian Language Teachers Association. Yes, I know the letters don't match LPKA, but one is in English and the other is in Lithuanian. And that's a whole interesting language in and of itself. So they posted a link to a BBC article that talked about this package of – you can get these little packs of cards. So just for – it's a five-minute activity. You can use it beginning of class, end of class, and just pull it out and use these 50 fun activities to get your students thinking and talking and collaborating while they learn. Some of the ideas are classics and some of them are new, but it's just a quick one, a quick thing. And they've got multiple packs of these cards, so you could buy 10 of them. Or I wouldn't, but you could buy a bunch of them, and then you could have a resource and pull it out and just say, all right, got a card here. Let's take a look at this. And they're designed to help your students work on their language abilities and language skills. And, of course, that applies no matter if they ELL or any level in middle school, they certainly need to work on some of their language, you know. And then you use your swivel, you create a QR code, use your swivel to take a video of it, and then you annotate the videos for your portfolio.
Well, actually, the video annotation, this is something a little different.
Oh.
This is a free service from the University of Minnesota. And you sign in, you can sign in using, it's free. You can sign in using your like Google admin, your Google credentials, not your admin credentials, sorry, your Google credentials, your University of Minnesota credentials, Facebook. It says Twitter as the existing accounts only. But they have a really nice help. Getting started video on the front end of this. And when you sign in using your Google credentials, it means that you can use videos that you've uploaded. And essentially, or you can use any video. You can search for a video. You can paste in a YouTube video. But because you're signed in with your credentials, you can, and that they're linked, you can pick something that you've uploaded as well. So the neat thing here is that you can, because I'm big on annotation, we do have a hypothesis group that anyone can join. you can annotate, but this is for video. This is specifically for video, and it puts those markers in the video. And then you can allow others to annotate it as well. So I think it's just a neat way to utilize video. And, you know, you could pop it into Moodle, into your LMS, pop a link into there. Because you get a link to the video, so you could do that. And then you can control whether the viewers can annotate or not. But I thought it would be really neat to have kids provide feedback on videos as well. And especially if you did this like in groups. So if you had small groups of kids annotating different videos, and you could get their thoughts about it. So, you know, you get the chance to teach them how to do annotation skills, and then you get feedback. You can, let them go ahead and annotate and find things that you want them to find. So if you want them to find, you know, like, where are the practical jokes? When did it go too far? You know, when did that practical joke go too far? Or, you know, annotate this video and tell me, like, when was the start of the practical joke? Why do you think they were doing this? What are some keys? Anyway, you could have them annotate anything within the video. But then they're doing the work. They're doing the annotation, and you get a chance to see their thinking as well. And I just think that was – I just think it's a pretty cool concept. I like having kids annotate as well. So
if they annotate, do they write over each other? Like, would they be piling words on top of words?
No, it puts their annotations on the side of the video. Oh, so okay. You get the video, right. And then you get a side panel where their annotations go. And then there's marking
pins
points.
That drop in.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Right.
Yeah. It doesn't go on top of the video.
Yeah, because you could just simply pile pins on top of each other, and that could get distracting.
Right. And, you know, with H5P, you can do some of this as well. You can do interactive video, but that by default is more of the teacher doing the work. And, you know, and that's a great strategy to have, ask them questions and get them to think. This goes to this is a little different in that you can let the kids do. Obviously, the teacher could still do all of the work and just make it so they can view it. That's one way of using it, but I think the power of this is letting the students do the annotation as well. So, and then Caitlin Tucker has a post with one of the longest titles that I think I've ever seen. Pile of words, drive deeper engagement with vocabulary at the beginning of a unit, text, or project. And I just thought this was a good reminder for people to bring vocabulary up and kind of prep kids with what the vocabulary is. But there is also a template here that you might want to steal. And it is a little bit of a process that they go through to deal with the vocabulary words. That you give them some of the vocabulary words and key terms, but then the students discuss them and kind of define them and put them into categories and make predictions. And then as they progress through the unit or the text, they revisit and revise their predictions as well. And there's a template there, so... just thought that might be handy as well. The other thing that's handy is to know what's going on in culture.
Yes, and Access, the Culture Translator folks, have our slang of the week. I'm going to steal it straight from them. It's called Lives in My Head Rent Free. It refers to something you dwell on frequently, with an experience, whether it's an experience, an image, video, or person. For example, I spent so much time learning the TikTok dance for Savage, now it's going to be live in my head rent-free forever.
Yep. And then Meredith Akers, who I've seen present, she does some nice stuff. She has some decent Google skills as well, helping out with efficiency. And she has a post about quick, easy, and quick prompts to help students connect to your content. And it's trying to create emotional connections, curiosity, and summarize. And she's got some examples in there. And she's also got a link to the random prompt generator that she created using Flippity.net. So if you want to check that out, again, nothing new, but sometimes just a new way of just to kind of refresh and reuse some of those effective strategies that you've got going on. So, all right, we appreciate you telling all of your friends and neighbors about the show, and we hope that you will continue to do that. You can find more information over at middleschoolmatters.com. We would definitely appreciate it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. and all other good positive things. If you have some critical feedback that you would like to provide for us, we have links to email, and we really would like to, we love constructive feedback. So shoot us an email and tell us what you'd like to see or hear differently. And we appreciate that as well. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care.